This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. In the studio with me today for her monthly show, Dr. Rajini Savanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. We're talking about outdoor play. Is it suitable for all children? How do we get children to do more outdoor play? What are the benefits for them? Because I think for many of us today, there's that sense of nostalgia for those days when, we used to cycle on the streets, in our neighbourhoods, play badminton over the gates, catch fish in the longkang. But that's really rare for today's children, especially those growing up in the urban centres. And more parents today are actually reluctant to let their children play outdoors. We're just worried about things like safety, basic safety issues. So we'll be asking Dr. Rajini whether this lack of outdoor play affects children's development and, how can we try to get more of it? How are you today, Dr. Rajini?
Fine, thank you, shall we?
If you have any questions, you can call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 01-879-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Bit ironic to be talking about outdoor play, Dr. Rajini, with the kind of torrential downpours we've been having every evening.
And it's like there's one going to be heading this way soon.
Yes, we have the best view for the clouds coming in. Nevertheless, we know that play is important.
Yeah.
But do you make the distinction between what types of play?
There's different ways that you can classify play, you know, according to stages of play that children go through. Also, we talk about structured and unstructured play. So structured play is when you give them a set of toys and there may be a set of rules or instructions to follow, or there's only a fixed way that, you know, you can play with that toy, or it's guided by an adult. And then you have unstructured play where basically children are free to do what they want, maybe with toys. So you give them toys or sometimes no toys at all and let them use their creativity. And there's nobody telling them these are the sets of rules or this is what you have to do with that object, etc. And generally when we talk about outdoor play, we tend to think about it as being unstructured play in a sense.
So what constitutes as outdoor play? Is it anything that they do outside?
Yeah, essentially. You know, anything from going to a playground to just taking a walk, or like you mentioned, playing badminton over the gate or fence. Basically, it's something that, you know, I would even consider taking your child to, say, a badminton court or a school hall, and just letting them run around as being, in a sense, outdoor, because they're not confined to a restricted space like a room, a living room, a shop lot for a kindergarten, you know, where there's so many obstacles in the way that they just don't have that free space, and they're not allowed, you know, they're so restricted by certain rules and things like that. So, I mean, ideally, outdoor play is something that you do outdoors in the open with the sun shining out there. So you're also getting your big dose of vitamin D at the same time.
So obviously, being outdoors is, the sunshine. I mean, what else do kids get from outdoor play that they wouldn't get from, indoors, playing indoors?
I think if we look at general health things, like when you play outdoors, most importantly, vitamin D. And I want to stress this because I think people always associate vitamin D with your bones, getting strong bones. But we know now that vitamin D is important for more than building bones. It's also important for your immunity. It's also important for, your brain development, attention, learning, etc. So I think it's important that parents understand that, vitamin D is so important.
Eyesight as well,
and
right?
Eyesight, yeah.
Yes. We've spoken to ophthalmologists who've said that the increasing epidemic of myopia is actually because of lack of outdoor.
And may not be directly related to vitamin D per se for eyesight, because, you know, it's about UV light that stimulates the retina, etc. But definitely, you know, vitamin D is beyond the bones and it's about general health. The other thing, when you go outdoors, there's better ventilation. Although parents get obsessed about the fact that their kids are going to get dengue and influenza HFMD. The contrary is true for the latter. You know, you're more likely to get hand, foot, mouth disease when you go to an indoor playground where, you know, it's air conditioned. There's nothing else taking away the germs apart from cleaning. Mm. Whereas when you go outdoors, you know, sunshine kills bacteria. There's constant ventilation. The rain comes, washes away stuff. Yeah, you get other things that, you know, you get dirt and
Asian parents can't. We cannot tahan the dirt.
and you know, you should listen to, I'm quoting Dr. Ken Wu, and you've had him on your show. Mm-hmm. One way of reducing allergies is to go out there, roll in the mud, play, stop being in such a sterile environment so that you challenge your immune system. So outdoor play gives you that opportunity. You know, when you run around in the padang or just walking along the street and you pluck a flower, you end up kicking mud, stepping into puddles. Yeah, it may come across as being dirty, but this is also building that child's immune system. So, you know, these are the health benefits. But and of course, a healthy child is a child who's going to maximize their developmental potential as well. And there are also positive effects from a developmental perspective.
What would some of those be?
I mean, the first thing that come, you know, that obviously I think is obvious to me is building motor skills. You know, when a child is outdoors, they're free to run, they're free to explore, they're more likely to face obstacles that they have to navigate. You know, just think about a child who, you know, when you walk along the street, there's the paved path, then there's the grassed area where the trees are growing, the roots are sticking out, and you're probably cursing because if you have a pushchair and, you know, the path is blocked and you have to walk on those things that, you know, it's not great if you have a disability or if you have a pushchair. But for a young toddler, I mean, that's where they learn to get their balance. Or when they run on a padang where, you know, or a field where the grass is, the surface is uneven. That's where they learn to, you know, judge depth and how big a step to take, crossing drains, crossing obstacles. And then, of course, playgrounds. You know, playgrounds are great for building your motor skills, not just your lower motor skills, your legs, but also your arms and, you know, by climbing, holding on to a swing, etc. So lots of benefits.
You know, when my son was much younger, I think when he was at that toddling around age, I used to bring him to the playground and let him run around barefoot. And a lot of people were horrified. And from then I felt, well, maybe I'm not doing the right thing. Is it all right to let them run barefoot?
It's great to let them run barefoot because not only when you're barefoot, you know, your feet start to take in different senses. Yeah. And, you know, we know that sensory stimulation is also important for motor development, cognitive development, attention. Because if you have an imbalance of your sensory development, and, you know, I see so many children, not just the children that I see in my clinics, but even when I'm out and about, you know, they just don't like touching food because it's sticky and dirty. They don't want to get wet, etc. And, you know, I think parents nowadays are so obsessed about, you know, they think about worms. Well, we probably had more worms in those days, but what did we do? Deworm ourselves and, you know, we were fine. And none of us were nutritionally, or very few of us, developed nutritional deficiencies because of those little worms, because we got dewormed regularly. So I think, you know, the risk is minimal and the benefits of running around barefoot is so important. And if you talk about, you know, nowadays parents say, oh, my kid's flat-footed, etc. And one of the things is some of them do have sensory issues or some of them have not been exposed enough so that they develop the muscles in their feet, so they form good arches, etc. So, you know, running around bare feet is great.
Okay, well, unfortunately,
not too late, Sharon.
I caved into to the dirty looks of some parents around me. Apart from the developmental benefits, you know, motor skills and coordination and all that, what about how different is it when a child learns to socialize in an outdoor setting, right?
Yeah. You know, when you tend to take kids outdoors, you tend to, they're more likely to get unstructured play, right? And this is where you find kids develop their social skills in that, you know, they have to go and if they're interested in a child, another child, and they want to play together. I mean, it's very interesting to watch little toddlers going up to each other. They start looking at each other, smiling at each other. And, you know, these are the early stages of social development. Mm. You don't need speech. I mean, you can have kids who speak two different languages. And this is the opportunity for them to develop those social skills. Mm. And if you start looking at, you know, initially kids, what do? They just run around and chase each other. Mm. Gradually, they start to make rules of their own. And this is where children start to develop their turn-taking skills. They are cooperative playing skills where, you know, you have to listen to what the other person is saying. You then start to negotiate and develop your negotiating skills. You start to develop your skills of emotional regulation. Mm. I get caught, I lose, I've become the catcher. Mm. You know, and you know, you have those kids who throw a tantrum, but then after some time they realize, oh no, they won't play with me if I throw a tantrum. Mm. So they learn to control their emotions a little bit more. So outdoor play gives children all these benefits. Because you tend to find when kids are outdoors, you don't quite care whether they make noise, they scream, they shout. So adults tend to interfere less. Mm. Whereas when you have a play date which is indoors and you invite or cousins come, what tends to happen? You know, after a while you get annoyed by all the screaming. You say, kids, be quiet.
And what you turn on the TV.
I was just going to say, what do people do now when they want their kids quiet? Mm. They turn on the TV.
Yes.
They don't throw them a bag of toys anymore. Mm. Or they start giving them gadgets, you know. So there goes that opportunity to develop these skills, which is why we are seeing a lot more children having behavioral issues in schools, because they haven't developed those basic skills that they should have developed.
So should there be minimal parental hovering during the outdoor play setting?
Definitely. I think, of course, you're not going to let kids start punting each other and spitting at each other and biting each other. Mm. And you intervene when there is. And sometimes, when you see that, especially if you have a child who may be a little more anxious about, you know, interacting with other children, then you do little prompts. Or for the very young children, when you're teaching them initially to take turns and share, and, you know, you prompt them a little bit and you get involved. But after a while, you know, adults should step back, let them make the mistakes, let them have their little arguments, because that's part of the whole thing. So, you know, definitely, I think that's one thing when you do have outdoor play, is that, of course, you want to be there supervising, making sure it's a safe environment, etc. But you want to be less involved in that play. Mm.
So related to parental supervision also is how much do we let children fall down and get hurt and take risks and not always be there holding their hands, right? And that's what I want to come find out when we come back. We have Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, in the studio talking about outdoor play. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, in the studio today to talk about outdoor play. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've talked about outdoor play being largely the unstructured kind of play, anything that you do out of the house, out of the four walls and the room. roof within the house, right? And it could be anything from taking a walk outside to playing in the playground, padang, or playing some sort of a game outdoors. And just before we left off, before the break, we were talking about how much should parents intervene when children are sort of learning to make their own rules, getting along with each other when playing together outdoors, and risk-taking. You know, a lot of parents are afraid to let their kids play outside, partly because they think that their kids won't know how to gauge risks and won't know how to prevent or take care of themselves, prevent injuries. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, how is a child going to be able to know how to balance themselves if they don't fall down? Because part of falling down is to sort of trigger the brain to sort of think about the next step you take, how it should be, you know, how you should move your body, etc. And by restricting children, you know, and constantly aiding them, we are stopping those brain neurons from forming the sort of synapses or the branches so that messages get across to different parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a lot of people say, oh, but, you know, what's motor skills got to do with anxiety? The brain doesn't work in compartments, and different aspects of motor development definitely affect emotional development, attention, communication, etc. So, you know, I think just restricting your child physically, even saying to your child, oh, don't touch that, it's dirty, don't do this. Yeah. There's, when you add in a lot of don'ts.
Don't climb on that thing, you might fall down.
Yes, yeah. And you are basically creating more anxiety in that child. Mm. Now, you know, we are all born with our different temperaments. And if you have a child who is already born as an anxious little being, you feed into that anxiety. Mm. And these are the kids sometimes who later on develop more and more mental health issues, you know. And so we have to be very cautious. And in a sense, when you take your child outdoors, you do know what your child's abilities are. I'm not saying don't hold your toddler's hand or don't find some way of being able to, you know, toddlers are that stage where they don't want to hold your hands. But if you know you're going to be outdoors by the roadside, then you do have to find some way of making sure that you're careful. You know, okay, if you want to take your pushchair, use it when you're nearing a big road or something like that. Mm-hmm. But let your child walk before that. Sorry. And you know, I think parents always, especially in Asia, we're reluctant to use these child harnesses or leashes.
Oh, yes. That's something else that will get you some looks.
Of course. Mm. But if you have a strong-willed child who you know is not going to hold your hand, wants to walk ahead, you know, why not? And so that you can pull back and you're sort of teaching your child that, okay, you're not allowed to go there. That's why I'm pulling back sort of thing. You know?
And on that note of, you know, letting kids fall down, get hurt and then, you know, in the future, they'll sort of like know where the boundaries are. You also have parents who feel that their kids are too timid.
Yeah.
And then they try to push them to do more. Yeah. And could that be equally detrimental?
Of course. If you try and push an anxious child to do something, you know, that is so difficult for them or they perceive as so difficult, that can also trigger more anxiety and maybe even lead to, you know, equivalent of panic attacks or the child avoiding situations like that. And this is where parents need to understand their children. And, you know, we call it scaffolding. So, you know, if that child's not going to jump down from a certain height, maybe today you hold both hands. Maybe after a while you just, you know, let them hold a finger or you just let them hold one hand, you know. So you gradually reduce that anxiety and until they feel that they're comfortable doing it.
And, you know, with outdoor play, I think in a way we do have many opportunities that are available for urban parents. Mm-hmm. You know, Taman Tugu is a great example. Yeah. They've opened up a very nice hiking trail. There's always the good old Bukit Gasing, at least within the, mm-hmm. the PJ area. Mm-hmm. And with these outdoor activities, it's really into the wild almost, you know. Yeah. And what are the benefits about learning of kids learning about nature? And parents, I think, may not want to think about that. They are focused on other other aspects of their children's learning. But what are the maybe not so overt benefits of connecting with nature?
You know, I think in today's day, you know, we all know about global warming, the pollution where creating, we're chopping down trees to build more roads and housing areas and things like that. So children don't appreciate nature, I think. And, you know, I think we may live through this generation without, I mean, we are already having the effects of global warming, but we have to think in the longer term. And, you know, for most of us who live in concrete jungles, we don't have the space to appreciate nature. No, people don't really have gardens anymore. Mm. Even if they have a plot of land, it's usually cemented mm-hmm. for a car park lot or, you know, something like that. So I think we need to create those opportunities for our children. And, you know, there's a lot to be learned from going out to places like this. You learn about plants, about different things, just the trails, you know, having to navigate through those trails. You know, it gives children a different sense of what the world is, I think, definitely. And it opens up their eyes.
Actually, it can be so much fun. You can spot things that usually you don't never see. Yeah. You know, little mushrooms and insects and things
like that. Butterflies, you know. I don't know. I mean, I've been to the... I was surprised earlier this year when we went to the Lake Gardens. I haven't been to the Lake Gardens for ages. Mm. And how they've done it, they've got different areas with different plants, Japanese plants, etc. And now different hibiscus, etc. So I think there's so much that our children can learn from, you know, going to these places. Yep. And I think it also takes them out of, you know, most of our kids with both parents working, what happens? They go to a babysitter or a childcare facility or a preschool where they're confined in the four walls. Mm. And we were just saying not many preschools now have the luxury of being able to own a land or garden.
Yeah.
Many are in shop lots. Then they come home. They are again in the four walls. Yep. Many people are now living in apartments and condos. So when they step out of their house, it's just cement and concrete.
Yeah.
So going out to these places gives children a different experience altogether. Mm. And you know, children naturally are curious beings. And we give them opportunities like this to learn. And you can teach your counting shapes, sizes, etc. When you go out there, you don't need a worksheet and a workbook.
It becomes unstructured and fun. But do children naturally like being in nature? I mean, I asked this because there was a study by University of Chicago psychologists which surveyed a rather small group of children. But what they found was that younger children don't have a natural affinity for being outdoors. Mm-hmm. Older children did.
Yeah.
And so then how do we get children to like the outdoors from a young age?
And I think that has got to do with the experiences they have from very young. And this is where it falls back on parents and carers. If you find that you expose your children to the outdoors from a very young age, they start to enjoy that more. If they're not exposed, especially as you know, toddlers, generally you find that, and I came across that study because, I've been sort of, you know, drumming it into parents, and one parent actually brought up that study that, you know, and she said she came across on Facebook. And I said, if you think about it, generally children will find things interesting if they see adults are interested in it.
Mm.
So why are kids interested in a handphone? Babies, you know, studies have shown that babies become interested in handphones because parents show a lot of emotional expressions when they are using their gadgets. Mm. And then the kids see that, oh, the mum's smiling at it, the mum's laughing at it, the mum's crying with it or whatever, and she's always animated when she's on it. So for them, it becomes like, oh, okay, you know, and they start to be interested in
it. Right, okay. So it's very much parental influence. Yeah. Okay. And what about children with different needs when it comes to bringing them outdoors? Non-typically developing children, what do parents need? Can they have the same outdoor experiences?
And I think this is where parents are often generally cautious about bringing their children with different needs outdoors. Mm. One, because they're always afraid about what other people are going to think if their child behaves differently. Mm. Two, they're always worried about their child who may have, are more likely to, or they perceive that their child is more likely to have injuries or as a result of their physical disabilities or the fact that their awareness of danger is not there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think for a lot of parents, especially the older they get, especially as they're heading towards puberty, and with that comes a lot of challenges in behavior, parents find that it's easier just to stay at home and, you know, keep them indoors. Mm-hmm. But we know that, you know, outdoor play and just being outdoors has a positive effect on your mental health for everybody. Mm. And if you speak to psychiatrists who see patients with depression or anxiety or, you know, the first thing they will tell people is make sure you start exercising and start going outdoors, take walks, etc. And, you know, if we're saying that to people with mental health issues, it must be good for this everybody. Mm. And what we found as well is that when you have children with disabilities and especially as, you know, they're being cooped up, we find those kids who don't have an outlet to exercise and, you know, get that physical energy out, you do tend to find that they tend to have more behavioral issues sometimes. Mm. And one of the things we found is that as they get into the pubertal years, they actually need more outdoors to sort of regulate themselves. And it actually helps by taking them outdoors.
Okay. But, you know, children of a younger age is kind of easier to influence their activities. Mm. But adolescents, you know, how do we encourage them? And this is the time when they're on their gadgets a lot more as well.
So it has to start when they're young. If you only start with them when they're, you know, heading into their adolescent years, I think you've sort of missed the boat. Mm. Unless they start to engage with peers who enjoy the outdoors, you probably find that it's not going to be easy to get them out. Trying to get an adolescent to do anything, or parents trying to get adolescents to do anything can be difficult. Yeah. And this is where you want to engage them with peer groups who do outdoor stuff. Mm. And, you know, I think it's got to start when they're young. And ideally when they're, you know, right from birth, go for walks, and expose them as their toddlers, and especially preschool children, you know. We see a lot of families doing it when they're toddlers, maybe going for walks. Mm-hmm. And then once they get into preschools and they get caught up in this rat race of having to teach and, you know, overschedule their kids.
The structured classes and activities.
You find that outdoors seems to be forgotten. And those are the years where really we want them.
Mm. And for many adolescents, it's also the age where their parents are putting pressure on them to study. Yeah. So if they say, I want to go out for a football game, it's quite likely that idea is going to be shot down, right? Yeah. We're talking about outdoor play today with Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. When we come back, we'll just have a think about, you know, if we're living in a concrete jungle today, what are the opportunities? What kind of hacks can parents come up with? And also for children with physical disabilities, how can parents still get in some sort of outdoor exposure to sun and all that for them? Mm-hmm. So we'll be right back after the market update right here on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Shao-Ik with consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan in the studio. We're talking about outdoor play for children today. We have a question on WhatsApp, very interesting one. Zaidi wants to know, he has two daughters, 11 and 8 years old. He wants to know how to deal with sibling rivalry. Let's try to tie it in with outdoor play, shall we?
Oh, Zaidi, very, very nice age. I had three daughters and my older two are a similar age gap to your two. Yeah, we were just talking about this and I think our solution is throw them outdoors, let them settle it. But seriously, you know, I mean, I don't know how bad this sibling rivalry is, but just play more together with them and try not to be... So when you play, try not to make it sort of competitive games where it's, you know, someone wins or someone loses. You know, I think you want to get away from that and just get them to do things like plan a picnic for the family. If you think they can't divide their roles, maybe then you intervene and sort of say, you do this part of the picnic and you do that part of the picnic. You know, incorporate it into your outdoor play and stuff.
I'm just curious, how much should parents try to have separate activities for each child, or should is the more constructive solution actually everyone do everything together? And
I think there should always be activities that you do together as a family, you know, whether it's things you like. It's about learning to compromise in a way, you know. I mean, I said this before, I am not a fan of cycling. I learned to ride a bike a lot later than most people. Mm-hmm. I think I was near 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. My husband loves cycling. And for my 40th birthday, everybody else gets a, you know, a spa trip or something. I got a bike.
Oh, okay. God.
you know, he was so excited. He bought me this $1,000 bike. I mean... as much as I dislike
it, we need to have a talk with him.
As much as I don't really like cycling, I know it's something that the girls and their dad love doing together. Mm. And so, you know, it's about compromise, isn't it? Yeah, sometimes I put my foot down, but I do it. And the same with the kids. They've learned that there are things that, you know, they can't always get their way. So you want to find time that you can do activities together. Definitely as they enter the teenage years, they want to do things separately, but always ensure you have that family time.
So hang in there, Zaidi. We've all grown up with sibling rivalry, haven't we?
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, how do we build in outdoor play in the kind of schedules that parents have today and with the kind of challenges that we face. I mean, just looking at working in Klang Valley after a full day of work, torrential downpour, what are the opportunities that we have?
I think, you know, this is where I hope, firstly, I'm not passing the buck, but I hope preschools, schools start to pay more emphasis on outdoor play.
As part of the school,
curriculum.
The hours.
Yeah. Yep. You know, PE, unfortunately, in schools has reduced. I mean, you know, I think back to when my eldest child was in school and they had a good hour, a double period of PE. And then when it came to my youngest child, there's 8 years difference, PE was just half an hour outdoors one day. Another day of PE was sitting down with a textbook. I mean, hey, why do kids need a textbook for PE? So I think schools need to start looking at making sure they go back to having an hour of outdoor PE at least a week, if not more. And when you do co-curricular activities like netball or whatever, stop making it a week theory and a week practical. Get out there and play. Kids can learn rules as they play the game. Preschools, I know a lot of you are in shop lots. Try and see whether you can do little walks. I know, you know, we were just talking, there are schools that are in malls. Maybe you can think about areas around the mall that, you know, you can go and explore. I mean, of course, it'd be nice to have nature, but if you don't have nature, what about just walking around the plant pots and, you know, I don't know, having some way of walking around the whole area maybe? Of course, you need parental permission and enough adult supervision. I think for parents, I know, you know, with the rain these days and the traffic, Yes, ideally, we say every child needs 45 minutes to an hour of outdoor play a day.
Mm.
And that's the recommendation for both health purposes as well as optimal developmental purposes. If you can't get them outdoors, think of little ways. For example, when you drop them off at preschool or school, park your car so you have to walk.
Mm.
Or, you know, instead of spending your time sitting in the mama having breakfast for that long, why not pack a sandwich, go to a playground. While they're running around, they can have their breakfast so that half an hour that you'd have spent in the mama is spent in the playground.
Yeah.
You may mean that you wake up about half an hour earlier to make that sandwich or pack your breakfast or pick up that nasi lemak along the way.
Mm.
But you kill two birds with a stone.
Yeah, yeah. And weekends, right? There are still weekends. Yeah.
And, you know, you on days where it's raining, we're going through the rainy season, use corridors. If you live in an apartment, use the stairwells.
Mm.
Play a game, you know. Have a ball, bucket of balls on one level and another bucket down below. Use your open spaces.
And make your child run up and down.
Exactly.
And kutip the balls, right?
Yeah. You know, little things like that. Yeah.
What about for children who are less physically able? Mm. Are our outdoor spaces, you know, conducive for them?
No.
And what can parents do?
I think, you know, you have to find the space for your child. I'm really glad to see a lot more NGOs now starting activities for children with different abilities. And they include children with physical and learning disabilities. You know, I'm going to shout out to a few of those. The Inclusive Outdoor Classroom in Subang, Care to Run. You know, there's recently a group, Cerebral Palsy Football.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so many other, I know, you know, there's somebody called Mr. Sunny who trains kids to play football, visually impaired kids, kids with autism. So there are a lot more NGOs now. And I think as parents, we need, of parents with children with disabilities, physical disabilities, we need to start advocating for more spaces and the existing spaces to be made disable-friendly.
Mm.
Sometimes you see, they plan it to be disable-friendly and then someone comes along, like recently DBKL's gone around and erected these fences along walkways, I think to avoid snatch thefts.
Mm.
But some of the positioning has meant that, you know, when there's a tree and then there's this thing.
And, you know, if you're on a wheelchair
you know, how are you going to maneuver that?
Mm.
And I just wish our town planners would also start to think a little bit more sensibly instead of just this impulse sort of actions that they want to take.
Mm. There's a lot of more broad-based and long-term planning that needs to take into account all these different needs.
And I think parents need to advocate for this, then we find that people listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a question on WhatsApp. Any advice for a parent who has bad OCD and phobia of germs? It's so difficult to let my curious and very playful daughter play outdoors carefree.
Please go and get your OCD looked at, you know, see a psychiatrist, see a psychologist. There's so many behavioral therapeutic methods to help you get through your own difficulty. Because as long as you have issues, your issues will stop your child as well.
Mm.
As much as you have the best intentions, if you don't, if you are not in the right frame of mind, indirectly it will affect your child.
Okay. Do you have any final message for us when it comes to outdoor play?
I would say, parents, think back to your childhood.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I'm now dealing with a generation of parents who also did not play.
Yes.
But, you know,
and increasingly, that's going to be the case.
Yeah. I think parents, you know, look back on old videos. You know, in my day, we, like you said, dug for worms, looked for tadpoles and drains. We used to play games with, you know, palm leaves that fell.
Sago seeds,
etc. You know, have fun with nature.
Mm.
If you haven't had fun with nature as a child, just go online and look for places in the Klang Valley that you can take your child to. Like what you've mentioned, that there are trails which are child-friendly now. So, you know, Frim, Taman Tugu, Lake Gardens, Bukit Gasing, in Puchong, Kota Kamuning, there are lovely lakes, lovely little hikes that you can take your kids to. Samanye, etc. Go out, enjoy nature, enjoy the outdoors.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rajini. That was Dr. Rajini Savarnandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, telling us about outdoor play for children. This was Health and Living on A Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.